he was driven as much as by curiosity as by the ultimate importance of what of the work was or what other people thought was important. For example, he studied subway behavior. One day his mother-in-law comes to visit them. They lived in Riverdale. She lived on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. She says, mm-hmm. Why is it, she was in her 70s, she says, why is it that people no longer give up their seats for gray-haired ladies? So Milgram looks at her and he says, well, did you ask anybody? Well, she thought he was out of his mind.
Sure.
He asked somebody in New York to give up their seat in the subway. So next day, this was the next class day, he goes into class. He says, boys and girls, we're going to go down to the subways of New York. And what he did was he had his students go up to seated passengers and simply ask them, excuse me, can I have your seat? Okay, so if you ask people to predict how many people would get up in New York City, right, and give up their seat, their hard-won seat, right? Well, it turned out, you know, most estimates would say maybe zero, one, you know, two. In actuality, over.
See, and I would have said it's probably based on who's asking.
Well,
that's what I would have said.
That is true, but all of them were kind of, you know, healthy-looking graduate students.
Yeah.
And yet over 50% got up and gave up their seat. And what was surprising is not so much here. The stress was not the subject that is the person who gave up their seat. The stress actually was experienced by the requester, by the students, because when they sat down, they felt sick. Because how else do you justify asking an older passenger to give up his or her seat unless you must really need it? And many said this was one of the most difficult things they had to do, to make that request. And when you think about it, it's just a very simple thing, but it illustrates a broader point, which is which really permeates much of Milgram's work. The power of norms, that is, much of our social behavior is guided by unwritten rules of what is appropriate, what is inappropriate behavior. There's an unwritten rule in the subways, on the trains, that, you know, first come, first serve. It's almost like your territory.
Yeah.
You just don't go up to somebody and ask them for their seat. And violating this norm was just painful, you know, to do. And once they got their seat, they had to justify to themselves by actually feeling sick, literally. So, you know, on one hand, it's a very simple study, but on the other hand, it first of all is counterintuitive. Nobody would have predicted it. And secondly, it touches on the broader issue of these silent systems of these unverbalized rules that bind us, that determine our behavior and their power.
It sounds like he loved getting into people's minds.
Well, I'm not sure in what sense you mean that.
Well, in terms of his experiments, I think he really enjoyed trying to come up with experiments that would prove his own thinking on how people would react.
Right, and also, he was curious, and he certainly delighted in coming up with with findings that people would not predict. There's no question about it. But he was a hands-on person. You know, he liked to do things. He was not much of a theoretician. He was brilliant. He was genius. People considered him to be a genius, but he was interested in phenomena. For example, there's something called the 6 degrees of separation, which actually originally.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, what that is it's actually the original name for that was called the small world problem. This was when he was still at Harvard, actually. One mathematician and political scientist came up with a mathematical model predicting that if you take a huge social network, you know, hundreds, millions of people, thousands of people, you can actually create a direct connection, a much more direct connection between two strangers within that social network. A surprisingly small number of links, it would only take a small number of links to connect any two strangers. They worked this out mathematically. Well, Milgram wanted to see whether it actually works in real life. So what he did was he set up an experiment where so-called starters, let's say in Nebraska, were given letters. And they were told, well, you have to get this letter to this stockbroker in Sharon, Massachusetts. And the way to do it is you have to pass it on to somebody whom you know on a first-name basis, who then has to pass it on to somebody who he knows on a first-name basis, and so on, until the target person is reached. Now, again, if you would ask people, and he did, how many intermediate links of acquaintances would it take to reach the target person, people predicted maybe 50, 40. Well, actually, it turned out to be, on the average, it only took about 6 links of acquaintances to connect two strangers.
And that's hence, it? That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, I should add that not all the chains were completed, but those that were completed, it only took six links. And it entered contemporary culture via a play called 6 Degrees of Separation, and then a movie. And today, that phenomenon is more known by that name than the Small World Problem. But again, here we have a person, he hears a theoretical idea, but he wants to see whether it actually works in real life and when goes out and tests it. And actually, it turns out he discovered something much more than he thought he did, because today, last few years, a number of people in the areas of physical science, applied mathematicians, have shown that the small world principle, the idea that you can connect points in a large network, not only social networks, but physical networks, with a very kind of cut a swath of a small number of links connecting points in a very large network, that applies even in the social realm. So that apparently, you know, for example, the grids in the Western United States, electric grids, conform to the small world principle. The cells of an amoeba, the connections between cells and amoeba, conform to the small world principle. The people who did this, Strogatz and Watts at Cornell University. So the small world principle that Milgram discovered actually accounts for much more than he thought it did. He only thought it accounted for social networks, but it seems to be broader. There's also stuff that he did. He identified a creature of urban life called the familiar stranger. Familiar stranger is basically a term he gave to people that, let's suppose you take a commuter train into from your suburb into the main part of town.
All right.
Every day, and you see the same passengers, same time, same station.
Mm-hmm. But you don't know them.
No, you don't talk to them. You never talk to them. Familiar strangers, familiar, but you never talk to them. So he wanted to find out, to what extent does this exist. So he actually did a study where he had his students take photographs of commuters waiting at the station, happens to be his station, and then asked them to identify which people they knew but didn't speak to. And it turned out everybody knew at least one familiar stranger. The average was four.